Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a real positive difference in the world. We explore important aspects and areas of life, including business, sales, physical, mental, relationships, financial, disabilities, and many more topics. My name is Tom Tuttle Cunningham. I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor, also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter. And I spoke in March 2012 at the Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was a keynote speaker for the event, also Dr. J.B. Hill, the grandson of Napoleon Hill, and Don Green, the president of Napoleon Hill Foundation. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now. And in that time, I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced, and been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1" due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. And I'm a senior editorial researcher at the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication, and we're the official and only media partner of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find out more about me at my website. It's Tom, the number 2, and tall.com. It's a pretty exciting day for me today. I have as my guest Derek Sweet. I've known Derek since my early 20s. You just found out I'm almost 50, so if you do the math, that's a lot of years. He's the chairman and founder of the Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise Corporation, which is a multinational training and development company offering personal development and corporate training programs in Canada, the United States, and Europe. Derek is also founder and executive director of the Certified Coaches Federation, which is a life coach training company that has now certified over 8,000 life coaches around the world. He is the author of the highly celebrated books, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven, Get the Most Out of Life, and Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, The Common Sense Guide to Creating Abundance. Derek is 100% vegan, which means he does not eat any meat, milk products, or eggs. Derek will not eat any animal that can experience love, joy, or suffering. And this life-changing decision happened immediately after watching the eye-opening documentary called Earthlings, which you can find at Earthlings, earthlings.com. Welcome to the show today, Derek.
Thanks, Tom. That was a wonderful introduction, I must say.
And we have known each other for a long time. And for our listeners, back when I was in my early 20s is when I met you. And we masterminded to bring Mark Victor Hansen to Ottawa. And I think I was telling Celia Ward-Wallace yesterday, one of your partners, I think one of your duties was to pick him up at the airport.
Yes, it was. My God, that was a long time ago. Seems like
and it wasn't a very big crowd, and he wasn't the chicken soup for the soul guy that he was then, but for three guys, and then we worked with our Shane Moran, co-founder of Organo Gold, and so the three of us had a great experience there. And so you've been involved in personal development for a really long time, haven't you?
Well, I was just thinking about that the other day. It's been over 33 years for me.
And, wow.
Like yourself, I started out like a student, and I fell into it kind of by accident. My mother really put it on me. I was when I was 16, and you know this, when I was 16 years old, I was a high school dropout and a bit rebellious, to say the least. I'd hitchhike across Canada one way and then the other way, and didn't really like school. And as a high school dropout, at the age of 16, my mother walked into my room one day, and she gave me Wayne Dyer's book called The Sky's the Limit. And I remember looking at it thinking, what is that? And I remember the first thing out of my mouth at the time, now keep in mind I had long red hair, and I said, the guy's bald. What would he possibly know about anything? Something like that. And as you know, I'm bald now. So karma began to work its way that moment into my life. And for the next, whatever, 20-something odd years, I, like yourself, was a student of self-improvement. Really, like yourself, shared the passion in learning and evolving and becoming all I could become, as well as, I mean, you mentioned your hurdles. We all have hurdles. and using self-improvement theories on philosophy and spirituality and psychology to grow, to evolve, to become more than I was, hopefully the month before, certainly the year before. And I found myself in a place in my life where I had to make a decision to either stay in the workplace that I was in and miss the opportunity to get involved in self-improvement from a real full-time perspective, or stay in a career that wasn't really fulfilling my spiritual needs and my mm-hmm. purpose, you know?
Yeah, and that is the one thing, Derek, as you know, with Napoleon Hill, is number one principle, basically he says you don't have it, all the rest are useless, is definiteness of purpose, and it's the one so many people ask me about. And you were a big time Bay Street, for those listening around the world. Bay Street is the equivalent in New York? It's like Wall Street in New York, exactly.
Canadian version.
The Canadian version, you are doing extremely well. You are managing large amounts of money and making good money. But then, and people would probably think, oh, Derek's doing so well. But then at some point you decided, this is really not my definite purpose. I'm succeeding at it, but that doesn't mean it's my purpose. And I love the story of how you got into it, and then you moved out into the country. You lived in downtown Toronto. Mm-hmm. And when somebody sees that or thinks of that now with your lifestyle, with all the horses and dogs and land and acres of land you have in your backyard, they would think, I can't imagine Derek cooped up in downtown Toronto. Mm-hmm. So tell me about how that came about, how you made that split. You also had to convince Marcia to move out into the country, and you have this just come check it out clothes that you use with her. And so tell
that.
Us a little bit about that one.
Yeah. Part of me really enjoyed being a stockbroker, financial planner. I was managing about $60 million on behalf of a couple hundred families at least, and financially was having a very good life. But as someone like yourself who's really looking at the bigger picture as far as what's my purpose, what's the meaning of life, how can I make a significant contribution, how can I be alive, I felt as I studied the spiritual nuggets of wisdom more and more, I realized that I was not really utilizing my potential, and certainly not living my purpose. So I wrote my book, my first book, Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise. Now, initially, it was kind of a blend between a financial planning book as well as a spiritual book, and kind of blending philosophy as well. And the subtitle was The Common Sense Guide to Creating Abundance. Well, I launched that book in about 2000, and I found myself giving keynotes on the spiritual side of abundance on the weekends and at night. And during the day, I found myself really focusing on just the financial side of things, and I felt myself more and more isolated from what I wanted to do. So one day, I just made the decision to walk away from it and take the ginormous leap of faith, which certainly that's what it was. And I think I told you this before, there were so many nights when I'd wake up in the middle of the night thinking, what have I done? You know, the self-talk, who am I to do this? Who am I to be an author? Who am I to be a speaker? Who am I to be anyone other than the person I've always been and the person people told me I should be? I think that's the mantra that keeps so many people in prison by anxiety and stress and this self-imposed prison of fear.
Yeah, exactly, and that's the one that holds so many people back, is that fear one. And then even at some point, you were, as you said, you were doing lots of these keynote talks, but you even refined your purpose even more, because at some point you said, well, great, I do a talk, people are excited, they learn something, but how have they changed in 3 days, 4 days? And so when I looked at it, I thought, wow, I would have liked to do that, like Derek, all those talks. But then you said, okay, I want to get deeper into people's lives. I want to just not talk to them. I want to change them. So now Certified Coaches Federation, 8,000 certified coaches. How did that evolve from all the speaking that you did?
Well, I wrote two additional books after Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, Get the Most Out of Life, and I had the help of Dr. Wayne Dyer, who endorsed it, and that certainly helped my speaking business, and I was speaking all over the place, traveling a lot, but I realized that I didn't really know how much of an impact I was having, my message was having, because I was usually, you know, the first speaker in the morning or the final speaker in the evening, one speaker out of many different programs, kind of blended into this corporate agenda that had a lot of other concerns, and the primary focus wasn't on changing their life or evolving or finding their purpose. And I found that if I could spend a longer period of time with a smaller number of people, I could have a better impact, a more permanent impact. So about 2004, while I was still doing a lot of keynote speaking, I decided that I wanted to become a certified life coach. And when I took a look at all the programs out there, I was just flabbergasted with how many of them were so expensive or time-consuming, not to mention political. So I thought to myself at the time, and I was hoping other people would share this belief, that the number one criteria to qualify as a coach isn't a course. It's your life experience. It's all the events you've gone through, good and bad, divorce, bankruptcy, cancer, arthritis, you know, whatever it is, that has given you the ability to look at life, look at yourself, and look at situations with a different lens, a wide-angle lens that allows you to avoid this pothole over here and take a shortcut over here. That's what a coach does. And I couldn't find coach training like that, so I went to work on creating ours. And 2 years later, in 2006, we did launch the Certified Coaches Federation. And as you mentioned, fast forward 6+ years later, we do have more than 8,100 coaches around the world. We're the most popular life coach training company on the planet, as far as I know.
And that's an amazing achievement, and probably, I don't know if you were smart enough to, when you started this, to actually look and see that, wow, life coaching is one of the fastest growing businesses, I think, because people are realizing that to get from, let's say, middle class to actually get all of your talents, skills, and abilities used to their full potential and really take off in life, a lot of people need that life coach. They need someone to keep them accountable, and so what an accomplishment to do that. And you probably didn't realize it was such an amazingly growing industry. But at the same time, when I think of, and probably others, when they think of a life coach, what kind of, give me some traits of a good life coach, because that's a big responsibility. A doctor can look after, let's say, your health care, but a life coach is looking into and poking into all kinds of areas of your life. And so what kind of person is a really good life coach, if you were looking for one and thinking of one?
I'll answer that. I just want to comment on what you just mentioned as far as our success. I can't take the credit. Our company, as you met Celia last week, we have the most amazing trainers, and it's because of that team that we have, people who share our philosophy and our spiritual approach to life and our values. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yes.
But to answer your question, the people who make it as coaches. And by the way, I give a complimentary introduction to coaching webinar every 2 weeks, and the link is always on our homepage. And I'm sure, are your listeners going to have a link to that or anything, or should I just mention
it? Yes, they definitely
okay,
will,
good.
Yeah.
Okay. But let me talk about that. The people who make it as coaches, for one thing, they care about people. They have an expertise in something that can help someone solve a problem or go from point A to point B. And they have that expertise. But you know what? A lot of people have an expertise. A lot of people have academic information in their head,
mm-hmm.
but they don't
do
much with it. The successful coaches not only have the expertise, but they know how to communicate. They know how to apply a creative process to tell someone how to go about a challenge or removing a barrier or arriving to a destination or developing a skill. They have that ability not only to communicate their expertise, but they have that passion that allows people to perhaps feel a little bit more inspired to take a leap of faith and go down this road that the coach is recommending they travel.
And at the same time, they have to be empathetic. They also must have to be, I would imagine that a lot of people will share with them things that a lot of people would not know or that they would not tell other people. And so you have to have that commitment of confidentiality, trust, confidence. And so that would be the type of person as well. You want to make sure that to have the proper coaching relationship, you need to bare your soul, your thoughts, your goals, your life, and so you need to be comfortable with someone when you're doing that, of course.
Yeah, compassion, empathy, and one thing that I always remind people is patience, because a lot of people who are coaches, they want to talk. They just want to tell people. It's really important to listen first, then tell them. And you don't just tell them when you coach. You talk about, a good coach training program will give you the skill to understand what the process of coaching is, and it's really a language of perspective. And that, what I mean by that is when you speak coach, you basically talk in such a way that you're just talking about possibilities, and the client, basically, it's assumed that the client knows themselves better than you know, fair enough, and they know where they want to go more than you know where they want to go. So if you take that expertise and you talk and you give the perspective of coaching the right way, people will feel empowered because they're making the choice. Now, there's a lot of questions about, well, is that all you do? No, there's a lot more to it than that. Obviously, as a coach, you have an expertise, and from time to time, you will tell someone what to do. You will lay out the steps to take, the five steps to take. But throughout the relationship, there's kind of a rhythm going back and forth between telling someone the steps to take and talking about potential roads to take, and that's where the coaching process comes in.
Nice. And, Derek, one thing I love about you is that if anyone met you at your home or even in the little town you live in, they would not know this is Derek Sweet, the founder of Certified Coaches, because you would smell like horse or dog. You probably have some plaid jacket on and gloves. And so you've been really able, even in your home life, to create your purpose. This is your purpose. You created it not just for your career and your life, and come on, think of 8,100 life coaches and the impact on them, their people they coach, and all the people related to the people they coach. This is a big impact. But at your home, what do you call it when you look out that back window of yours? You have a phrase for it or something.
Oh, I call it bliss. I'm actually sitting on what we call the perch. You haven't been up here in a while. You have to come up. I'm actually looking out my back window now. But, you reminded me of something. I remember along the journey, I read a book, Walden Pond, and a lot of your listeners would have read it or heard of it. And in the book, he talked about the simple life and the serenity that I think all of us desire. And that's all I've ever wanted to have, is a very simple life that allows me to make a difference and, sing my song and make a contribution, serve something bigger than myself. That's about it.
Exactly. And then, of course, Derek, if we didn't put this in the interview, Marcia might kick your butt and mine. But Napoleon Hill writes a lot, as you know. You are a Napoleon Hill fan. And he writes a lot about the ideal mastermind, ideally, is between husband and wife. He cites Henry Ford and Thomas Edison as examples. And I know Marcia's been in this from when you just had it as a idea in your brain. You had to do some selling on the residence and the horses. But tell me about what it's like to mastermind with your wife and Marcia and work with her every day, because not every couple could do that. And you guys seem to be doing an amazing job. You've been together for a while. I see Facebook posts where you're always going out together and having your time together. So tell me, again, part of your definite purpose wasn't just the career and the certified coaches, but you've put everything together that you want for your definite purpose, don't you?
Yeah, I've been very lucky with Marcia as my wife. As you know, you do know Marcia. And working with your wife in the same business, it's been challenging, but if you work through it and you have some strategies, it can be just the best thing. We actually had a meeting this morning, as we do every single day at 7 o'clock, and we talk about what's going on today and what we need to work on. And we have a wonderful working relationship, and obviously we have a wonderful marriage as well. But it's really been a compliment to our marriage, working together at the same company, because for us, it's not a job. It's more of our art. It's like we're both showing up at the same painting today, and we're saying, okay, what colors are we going to use today? Okay, what would you want to bring into the view today, you know?
But you had to introduce all this to her. Tell just quickly a little bit of the story of how the Come Take a Look clothes.
Oh, I know
you use
going.
That
yeah,
in your house,
yeah.
And you use that, I think, on the first horse you got, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, okay, I'll mention those. Well, we were living in downtown Toronto, and I just quit my job as a really good job, and I was going through that, you know, pre-midlife crisis. And I was on the internet one day, and it's always been my dream to live out in the country since I was a little kid, you know, live out in the country, have a log home, and have horses. And there we were in downtown Toronto in the city. And I called her in my office. I said, honey, look at this. She said, what's that? I said, it's a log home. It's our next home. And she said, well, hang on a second. We need to go out and see it first. And I go, but look. And she being more, I guess, adult than I am, I guess I'm a big kid, you know, she wanted to know, well, where's your closest neighbor? Where's the, you know, the grocery store, the bank, and all this stuff. And so we went out, and next thing you know, we're living out in a place in the middle of nowhere on a dirt road, in a place called Norland. And that was our first entry into country life. And long story short, we stayed there for about 4 years. And you mentioned horses. We took horseback riding lessons, and we thought, oh, one day wouldn't it be nice to get horses? And one day I found myself looking at an ad for a horse for sale. And I said, I remember it was in May. And I said to Marcia, I go, oh, wouldn't it be fun to go look at these horses for sale? And she looked at me and she goes, no, we're not buying any horses. And I know, of course, I said, no, of course, we're just going to go look at them. But what happened was we went out to look at them, and one of them came up to her and the other one came up to me, and they kind of nuzzled us, and that was it. And next thing you know, we have two horses. And but what's really funny, though, when we moved out to this log cabin in the middle of nowhere, it was 25 acres, and it was all wooded, right? No pasture. And so here I am with two horses, and I'm boarding them. And I'm thinking, well, I have to have pasture. So people in the – this is funny. People in the country out here call people from the city idiots. And there's good reason. I definitely was one of them. I'm sitting there with 25 acres, and I said to Marcia, we have to create a pasture for these horses. So I buy a chainsaw. You know where I'm going. I buy a chainsaw, and I go out to try and cut 4 acres of pasture for horses. Listeners, don't ever do anything so stupid. It's not recommended. Long story short, I almost had my head taken off by a tree that fell, and I didn't see which way it was going to bounce up. And we eventually did get the 4 acres, but it was with the help of a real expert.
People who actually do that for a living,
yeah,
not people who are certified coaches.
Yeah.
And so both at your home life and in your career now, you're really enjoying probably precisely the purpose you would have written down for your life in so many areas of your life. And now let's talk about recently. Boy, when I'm reading your Facebook post recently, you've become passionate and I think created almost a new purpose for your life with this Earthlings movie that you saw. Tell me about that experience, because it's practically bursting with enthusiasm from your Facebook posts.
Well, yeah, this may be the most important part of our conversation today, although it's all good. I'm enjoying all of it, but you get right down to purpose. Purpose is not a fixed thing. You know, your purpose changes as you change, as you have different priorities. I mean, a new parent, perhaps their primary purpose is to raise that child, right? It really depends where you're at in life. Like yourself, I'm approaching 50, and hopefully as we get older, we start to think about our purpose here, what we're doing, what kind of contribution, if any, we're making to the planet, to others, especially the people we share our life with. And over the holidays in December, I did find myself watching some documentaries, one of which included the documentary Earthlings, and the documentary talks about animal suffering. The key word here is unnecessary animal suffering. And I had my eyes open to things I had no idea about, as far as all the suffering that goes on in the production of what we call food, meat. And I then basically learned, it all happened in a short time. I learned about global climate change. I watched some more documentaries, and I found out how urgent the problem is, as far as collectively as a people, as a one tribe, you know, to collectively do something to stop global warming. Because, as you may know, since 1979, the permanent Arctic ice has 60% of it has melted. In fact, Cambridge University predicts that the rest of it's going to be gone in 4 years unless we do something. United Nations says that our planet needs to convert to a plant-based diet to avoid global, not climate change, but global catastrophe. So when you add up all the pieces of this equation, you can't help but at least look at veganism, which is basically reverting to something we used to do way back when, and that is live off a plant-based diet. And the media and corporate greed has done such a great job in basically putting us in this trance to think we have to eat meat, we have to eat cheese, we have to eat eggs, when in fact meat, cheese, and eggs will give you heart disease, stroke, and cancer. And, you know, your listeners can do their own research. You can go to Netflix. You can just go online and Google, you know, health benefits of veganism or vegan health benefits. Or if you want to look at from an environmental standpoint, you can watch some great documentaries, including, let me just mention two of them, or actually three. Everything's Cool, which is on Netflix. The Age of Stupid, which I really enjoyed. Great name. And another one that's from Australia that I recently watched in the last week is called adelicatebalance.com.au. So, listeners, if you watch all four documentaries, including Earthlings, you'll arrive at the same point I did and do, and that is something has to change. I have to do something. If I can do something, well, then I must do something. In our society, we've been conditioned to be selfish, to build your identity on external things, on your reputation, on your possessions, and pay very little attention to what matters most, what has always mattered most, and that is internally, you know, how I think, how I feel, what I believe, and what I expect. And as soon as we gravitate to home, to the only way we can find real lasting peace, we give up all this external business, or at least a lot of it, and we start gravitating towards a simple life, making more of a contribution, leaving a legacy, and above all, walking with a soft footprint.
Exactly. And then I was introduced to vegetarianism in my early 20s. I dated two women who were vegetarians, both of them that taught cooking classes. And boy, I can tell you there's a lot of vegetables I had never heard of or seen before. And in the hands of someone who knows how to cook, I didn't miss meat that much for those few years. There are some amazing meals that can be cooked, but I also studied and learned. I think the book was called Made in America. The author was the heir to the Baskin-Robbins ice cream.
John Robbins,
and he refused to take that inheritance, talked about the suffering of animals. If you learn how that meat of any kind gets on your plate, it'll be disturbing to you to find that out. And then also, I also learned about a lot of the water use and water pollution in this world comes from cows and feeding them and the manure they put into the environment.
Yeah, cows in particular produce more greenhouse gases, 23 times more greenhouse gases than cars, trains, and planes. It's just people have no idea, but the methane gas is really harmful to the environment, to our atmosphere. People just don't know. And once you take a look at the facts, you understand that 69,000 acres of rainforest are destroyed every single day to produce beef when it just doesn't have to be, you know. 70% of all the rainforest land has already been destroyed to produce beef. Now, when you take a look at the planet's health, Well, that rainforest is a vital component to our health because that provides the oxygen to the planet. Well, what happens when we cut down so many trees? Trees take in carbon dioxide and give out oxygen. We produce carbon dioxide. I mean, the equation's getting worse and worse and worse, so something has to be done. So for those of your listeners who really want to gravitate towards the purpose, the movement in saving the planet, in saving the health of your loved ones, in having more energy, and not to mention the spiritual benefit where you feel connected to everything when you don't harm, when you know that what you eat on this meal, at this meal, is not creating any suffering, you just feel so much more alive and connected. It's just, I can't even put it into words. It's just amazing. You just have to experience it.
Wow. Now, Derek, a lot of people, of course, and I'll put myself in the category of a lot of people. They're going to say, okay, Derek, I see this. It makes sense. It's obvious. It's not fictional. It's proof. But I'm not going to go 100% vegan. Give me three things that an average person can do that will make their diet less harmful to the environment, to animals, and to the world.
Well, good question. I would suggest that you try for a week just to have a vegan breakfast, which means for breakfast you're not going to have any meat, dairy, or eggs. And after a week you'll realize that an arm didn't fall off. You may notice you have more energy. You may notice that you lost maybe a little bit of weight, and you may think, I'm going to keep doing this. And then the next week, you have a vegan breakfast and you have a vegan lunch. And you survived that, and you realize that, again, an arm didn't fall off. And now you try it the third week. Now you go all the way, vegan breakfast, vegan lunch, vegan dinner. Now, obviously, you're going to need some help. And the good news today, unlike, you know, even 10 years ago, there's so much information. You go to Amazon.com. I recommend everyone go to Amazon.com, buy a bunch of vegan cookbooks, you know, find out about plant-based protein, you know, get some vegan books that talk about where to get your calcium. People will be amazed, for example, that there is protein in absolutely everything. Vegetables, green leafy, spinach, kale. Now, I'm not a big fan of kale, but the good news is, again, protein is everywhere. Okay?
Yes. Yeah.
And the good news is, though, you're going to be contributing to the healing of our planet. And I always say to people, and you probably read this yesterday, I wrote something, I said, if I can't convince people to become a vegan based on morality, just the fact that killing another animal is wrong, anything, any animal that feels joy or suffering, who wants to live every bit as much as you do, I mean, knowing that that's wrong, killing them, it's knowing that it's just wrong. Okay, that's number one. The environment, when you look at all the facts and you understand that meat production is above all the number one contributor to global warming, right? And finally, for your health, you'll realize you'll have more energy, you're going to be far less likely to develop heart disease, stroke, and cancer. And a great book to read is The China Study, where there was tons of research produced on the health consequences of drinking milk. It is horrifying what's been able to go on in the last 50 years as far as the big, ginormous milk marketing machine convincing us that milk, you know, milk does the body good. And people think, well, milk has calcium. No, no, no. Milk may have calcium, but milk depletes calcium in your bones because it's acidic. And your body's natural response when you drink milk is to release calcium from the bones. And if you take a look at all the countries that drink the most milk, they have the highest incidence of osteoporosis. I mean, the facts are there, but they've been hidden so well by that well-oiled marketing machine called the
Even dairy. A doctor will tell you that, to drink milk. Jeez, I mean, imagine me with arthritis, had to take pills all these years. And so yeah. Drink milk to strengthen your bones and coat your stomach.
Well, the world is changing. There's a revolution going on right now, an evolution, and people are not standing for the manipulation that's been going on. The FDA, for example, in the United States, they're supposed to protect American consumers as far as what foods they eat and what they don't eat. Well, Europe and Canada banned this hormone that farmers were putting into the cows that would increase their milk production by 10%. Well, we did some research and we found out that it's likely to increase your probability of getting cancer. So Europe and Canada, we said, no, that's not healthy. And there's some other nasties as well. But in the United States, it's still being produced. Most of the milk in the United States has this horrible ingredient in it. So I think, as again, more and more people are having conversations like we're having today, people are going to be looking at their leaders and saying, hey, this is wrong. Something has to be done here. So
yeah, you're right. Now, Derek, let's say I'm thinking of your steps there. Breakfast, I have okay, you're going to chide me here. I have skim milk, about 6 ounces, peanut butter, a banana, and whey protein. I guess whey protein and milk are out. Now, I do also have a vegetarian protein powder, so I will start buying more of that and eliminate the whey. What would I replace that skim milk with?
Okay, I'm looking in my fridge. I actually have the door open to my fridge right now. And, we live in Canada, so it really depends on the season. In the summer, I eat a lot more fruit, but it's cold here in the winter, so I eat more like hot oatmeal, organic oatmeal, of course. And in the oatmeal, I put either blueberries or strawberries. And then I add hemp seed, which has tons of protein.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hemp seed, you can buy that at any health food store. Organic, of course. Almonds, pumpkin seed. And for the brain, of course, walnuts. And I may add some cranberries.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I may add some banana.
This is way more than oatmeal at this point.
I may add a little bit of maple syrup, cinnamon, and nutmeg.
Ooh.
Let me tell you.
Oh, I love the maple syrup. Ooh,
this,
and cinnamon.
You know what this is? This is octane that will send you to the moon. I mean, you have probably at least half your protein for the day right there.
Yeah, and it's not bad tasting. You're not saying eat this thing that tastes like crap, but is good for you. It actually tastes good as well. And boy, one thing I noticed, I used to read a lot of fitness magazines, and a lot of athletes, bodybuilders, all these other athletes would start the day with oatmeal. Must be some magical food or some superfood, because a lot of athletes eat oatmeal almost every day.
Yeah, I ate it in the winter, not so much in the summer. But, and I bet you didn't know this, spinach. 2 cups of spinach has about 8 grams of protein. And spinach sauteed in a frying pan with a bit of garlic, it's bliss. It's just wonderful.
What I think of, too, because a lot of people think, oh, vegan, vegetarian, I'm going to be some skinny bean pole. But Tony Robbins is a vegetarian, and he's no skinny bean pole.
No.
I've
gained weight because I've discovered so many great-tasting foods. I've gained about 0.5 pound.
I remember even when I was eating for a few years like this, I discovered Rice Dream bars.
Yeah.
And they tasted like ice cream, but they were made of rice.
Oh.
And I was like, this cannot be what it says it is. But it was so delicious. It was like junk food for vegetarians.
Good point. You brought up ice cream. And there's going to be a lot of people who say, oh, my God, I couldn't give up ice cream. Well, you know what? There's so many companies out there that are producing, and I don't like to call it fake cheese, but, well, that's what people know it as. And I'm looking in my fridge again, and I have this fake cheese. It's called Daya. D-A-I-Y-A, okay?
Okay.
And, this one is jalapeno garlic. Now,
ooh.
You know, the first time you try something like this, you may say, ooh, or you may say, well, it tastes funny. Well, of course it does. If you're comparing it to cheese, it's going to taste funny. However, you try it a few more times, you get used to it, and eventually you'll start to like it. Who knows? Maybe you'll like it right away. I can tell you, I didn't like it the first time I tried it. Now, granted, I didn't try the jalapeno garlic, which is awesome. So it comes in every kind, shredded, block, you name it. And the thing is, again, knowing that you're not putting this chunk of saturated fat in your mouth, which is clogging up your arteries, sooner or later you start to feel what you expected when you made the decision to become vegan. Now, again, you may have made the decision to become vegan for your health. And sooner or later, you'll just wake up and you'll just feel, where did all this energy come from? That's my experience. Not only the energy, but there's a calmness because, you know, all those other foods like meat, dairy, and eggs are just saturated with not just saturated fat, but hormones and other nasties as well. The more you dig into what is in the food that we call, you know, meat, dairy, and eggs, the more you learn that it's not healthy and something's got to give if you want to enjoy the best health of your life.
Here's a question came to my mind. I know you have, I think, 4 dogs at last count. I forget now. You have more than some pet food pet stores now. Do you change the diet for dogs, or is this the way they're meant to eat the canned dog food? And you can't make a dog go vegetarian, can you? They're going to be like, what the heck is this spinach thing?
You can't make a cat go vegetarian. There is okay. Vegan dog food. There's v-dog.com, and there's others. One of my dogs is pretty old, Sadie, my Bouvier. You know Sadie. She's 12.
Sadie, yeah, age. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're not about to change her dog food right now. It's just she's too sensitive. She's in her, you know, ninth inning of her life. So there's no way we're going to do that. And she's had some health issues as it is, so we're not going to do that. But our other two dogs, because Newman passed away, the other two dogs, one is 2 and one is 3. We're definitely going to put them on a vegan diet because they can handle it, but we haven't picked a dog food yet for them. So.
Sad about Newman. I met Newman.
Yeah. He lives until he's 12 and a half.
Wow. He's big enough he almost knocked me over when he gets rambunctious. So you can even do it for your dogs. We got 2 dogs.
Yeah.
So, and now they're not going to be snarling at you or anything when you change their food, right? Like,
but again, you know, the people are resistant to change, especially in the medical world. I mean, you tell your doctor you're going vegan. They know, not all of them, but most of them know very little about nutrition. They don't
right.
really study it much in med school. Tell your vet you're thinking about putting your dogs on a vegan diet. They'll probably not think it's a good idea. It's not that it's not a good idea. It's just that people don't know. And there's a lot of money at stake in changing the world from how it is to how it can be. But here's what I want to get across to you and everyone listening. If we don't reevaluate how we live and how, especially how we eat, we're in trouble. Our planet's in trouble. We have to make this shift. We have to look at other choices. Yes, it's going to take work. Yes, it's going to take discipline. Yes, you're going to have to learn to cook a different way. But you will discover, if you buy some of these cookbooks, some amazing recipes, and you'll discover the best you, so it's worth it.
Wow, definitely worth it. And so I'm going to be really looking forward to watching you with this new purpose. It's like you're exuding enthusiasm, and I don't think anyone who gets within 6 feet of you for the rest of your life is going to miss out on your message. So I know that this is a real passion. It makes sense. It's just a decision people have to make. And even as I kind of mentioned earlier, you don't always have to make the decision to switch entirely, be 100% vegan. But even if you can make, you know, minor adjustments, you are contributing to the planet, to the world. You're reducing suffering on animals. And so it doesn't have to necessarily be an all or nothing attempt to, you know, to be better to the world. You can take the little steps that you suggested and make a difference even in your own home.
I'd just like to add a final comment. And the last thing I want to do is cause anyone to feel uncomfortable, but I'd like people to really understand the suffering. And Earthlings may take, I think it's about an hour and a half, and you may not have an hour and a half, so I have another video that you may want to watch. It's a little bit more graphic, and it's hard to watch because you will see animal suffering. And the video is meatvideo.com. But think about it. It's hard to watch. Why is it hard to watch? If meat is so good for you, if we should eat meat, then it shouldn't be hard to watch. We should be able to enjoy the meat being prepared for us as it's being prepared for us. But as you discover what happens as the meat's being prepared for us, there's a part of you that says, this is wrong.
Exactly. Thank you so much for your time today, Derek. You're doing some amazing things, not only with certified coaches, but with your new purpose. It is going to make an impact on a lot of people. And through your network of certified coaches, you've already impacted students and everybody that comes in contact with them. So keep up the amazing work. So nice to talk to you again today, and have an amazing day.
Thanks for having me, Tom. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Bye now.